OTB Sports Radio. Football never stops, and neither do we.
Don't shoot.
Oh, he dinked it. Oh! It's a goal! It's a goal!
The Football Show is the only place to get the best analysis.
We've tried this way, and we've been trying it for a long time, and it's just after process now.
Best interviews.
There was talk that you used to go commando when you played, and...
Yeah, I did. I never wore pants. Still don't wear pants.
And best opinions on all things from across the pond and here in Ireland. Live every night from 9 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
I listen all the time.
Get OTB Sports Radio online at offtheball.com/radio or on your phone by downloading the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Tuesday's Off the Ball. So League of Ireland season is back from July 31st. Not everyone involved thrilled with the situation, it would seem. 9 of the 10 Premier Division clubs voted against it. So Shamrock Rovers, the outlier there, they voted to proceed. We'll talk to David Rowe. He's the Sligo Rovers treasurer, and we'll have Vinnie Perth on as well, manager of Dundalk. After 8 o'clock, it has been a monumental and fraught time over in the US since the death of George Floyd. In a sporting sense, NASCAR in particular has found itself grappling with the issue of racism, both traditional and current. We'll talk to Jay Busby. He covers the sport over there. On the Football Show, Dermot Corrigan with us. Barcelona in action tonight. They are imploding. They've spent about $800 million in the last 5 years and haven't managed to sign one player who's made an impact. And things are going from bad to worse at the moment. Dermot Corrigan joins us after 9. Kenny Cunningham then will be watching Manchester United. They are away to Brighton this evening. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello.
Hey, Joe, you well?
Very well. Will O'Callaghan, hello to you.
Evening, Joe. Evening, Richie.
I should mention as well, also this evening, we will bring you some of the second episode of Alan Quinlan's How's the Head series. He had John Kirwan on last week. We played you some of that. This week, it is comedian, actor, Pat Short. The full chat, as indeed all our content, is available on the new OTB app. Just search OTB Sport in your app store. It is free. It houses all our content, live scores, articles, videos, etc. It will also include, by the way, Michael Deignan. So he is the Offaly County Board Chairman, as I think you all know, as of the last 6 months, certainly. He was on the show last night. He caused quite a stir. We wanted to talk about this club versus county situation, which is very much brewing, it would seem. Everybody seems to hear about counties back training. They are doing the rounds, those stories. Michael had heard them as well. And this is not meant to happen, obviously, until the 14th of September. On Friday, the GAA said there wouldn't be sanctions for infringements. And so it seems really, in practice, to fall back on county managers or county boards to do the right thing. That's leading to a variety of results, which just seems daft. And Michael Deignan was on last night in his capacity as Offaly County Board Chairman. And he was not impressed. Here's a brief summary.
I would have said that once you're out of the club championship, you can go back and play with your county. It's very unfair on a county player that's maybe beaten earlier than that, that they wouldn't be allowed back to their county. And I would have also have said that any county that trains between now and that date, like what's going on reportedly now, I'm only reporting what's going on around the country, I would have thrown those teams out of the championship. I think what you're saying, we've always been skirting the rules. Yeah. This is not skirting the rules. This to me is way more serious than that. We're just coming out of an unprecedented time in all our lives, and we can't talk out of both sides of our mouth here. If community is going to be first and if club is going to be first, for the reasons, it would have been much easier to bring back into county from a logistics point of view. But the decision was made to go back with our clubs because every player is a club player. And I'll be honest with you, it's not even disappointment. I'm disillusioned with the direction from inter-county managers, first of all, for forcing and putting pressure on their players to go back training. Because players will do, as I've said many times in the past, they will do whatever they're asked to do. But I'm starting with the inter-county managers, then their county boards for allowing it to happen. I'm also disillusioned with Croke Park for not coming up with stricter sanctions. And the players themselves, and the GPA in particular, for not standing up for the players and saying, we're not accepting this. Because it's hypocrisy, it's dishonest. And what sort of a message are we sending out to young men that are supposed to be leaders in their community at 22, 3, 4, 5 years of age? They're supposed to be leaders in communities. We're running courses for them. We're putting them through college, through the GPA, and yet we're telling them to be dishonest and to be hypocritical is the right way to go about your business. I think it's disgraceful what's happening around the country. And I think it's high time that people in the GAA grew up and grew a pair of balls and called it out for what it is. You're either training with your county or you're not training with your county.
That's just a snippet of Michael Dignan last night. The full interview is well worth your time, as you can imagine, if that's the first time you've heard that and is waiting for you just to download the app or indeed any of our podcasts in the usual places. So, Will O'Callaghan, you Offaly boys, causing a stir again. What did you make of that?
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty consistent with what Michael Dignan has said over the last while. And I was talking to his football manager, John Mahon, at the weekend. And John Mahon said he'd be respecting the date of September the 14th and said that the club championship is going to run with many of his players playing right up until the first week of October, because hurling will be played before football in Offaly. And he says he won't be asking anyone to come back to any kind of collective training before then. He did say it would be preferable. And I know a lot of managers have said this probably over the weekend. Davy Fitzgerald was thinking similarly on Saturday that perhaps players who are knocked out of the championship before September the 14th could be allowed to go back in to start some work with their county, or perhaps to be assessed maybe for injuries or strength and conditioning before that. I think, given that Tom Ryan said they're willing to look at things, that's a compromise that could be found. But I was a little bit dumbfounded, to be honest, when I was covering the press conference for OTB Sports last Friday, Joe, in Croke Park. And the first question that was asked in the press conference was, what would the sanctions be if an inter-county team was found to go back into collective training before September 14th? And John Horne, the president of the GAA, said it's not that type of day. And what we want to do is encourage teams to take personal responsibility in what they're doing, but we won't be punishing any team who go back. Now, Tom Ryan, in a follow-up question, did say they could potentially review this. John Horne had said that he wanted any team that do so to be reported to the GAA, but said it was very unlikely they would face any kind of sanction. Given what Tom Ryan said, that they were willing to review the situation, and given, I think, the dialogue that we've seen, particularly over the last 24 hours since that Michael Dignan interview, and perhaps some of the follow-ups on OTBAM this morning, I think there's a very strong argument for them to have a look at this and to actually put in sanctions. I'm not sure if they should be quite as strong as a team being kicked out of the championship, but even if a fine was to come in, if a team was found to be in flagrant disrespect of the actual date of September the 14th, well, then surely there has to be some kind of reason for them not to go back, because there's no reason not to go back yesterday or today if there's going to be no sanction for going back on the 14th of September.
Yeah. Big text reaction yesterday, and even a few coming in now. Fair play to Michael Dignan coming out saying how he actually felt. Maybe if more members of county boards did the same, we might actually see some change. And Tony says, like, Michael Dignan using the phrase, grow up and grow some balls, is one of the great radio moments of the year, which I think we can all agree with. Grow up and grow some balls.
Absolutely.
Sorry, like, Richard, you were coming in.
Yeah, can you imagine if you were, say, if you're on a county panel and you're a member, or you have family members who are part of the medical front line or have been part of the medical front line over the last 3-4 months, can you imagine how that would leave you feeling if your county manager is asking you to flout every kind of regulation, whether it's a GAA one or a governmental one, to go back training? Like, you would be, I would imagine, if you were that frontline worker or related to a frontline worker, angry as hell.
No, it's true. I do think increasingly, though, if they're back playing club action and the government are fine with that and everyone's fine with that, it is a lot to ask county managers to not have access to their players until, 14th of September at all. And I know Rory Gallagher is actually on OTBAM tomorrow morning, which will be very interesting, because Derry are taking a strong line in this. They're running their club championships up until and including the 11th of October, senior and intermediate. You know, Rory Gallagher's got a massive game then, I think, a week later in the league against Longford, off the top of my head. That's tough. You know, that's not ideal preparation. He might have one session, two sessions proper with the county team, and it's difficult for everybody involved. I can see how the county managers want a bit more access to their players. But yeah, once the GAA set the rules, to say there's no sanctions, it's going to cause anarchy. Because, I mean, put a number on it. What percentage do we think? 50% of county teams will break it? 60, 70, who knows? Who knows how many are breaking it now? But if you're, for instance, and we can go on the Offaly example, given what Michael Dignan has said, if you're John Mahon, what must really irk you is not so much respecting the rules, but if you know that the team, and I don't know who the team is, by the way, but if you know the team you're due to play in the Leinster Championship, for instance, if you hear...
Carlo,
okay, well, I'm not going to throw aspersions around, but if you are a county manager and you're respecting the rules and you hear that down the road they're training away and they're getting fitter and they're working on tactics together as a group, that is a huge advantage and that would drive you mad. So what, John Horne wants you to ring Croke Park, let him know, and then they won't do anything about it? It's just going to get messy, this whole thing. So we'll have to see where it goes. We should start the news round. Richie, I mentioned the League of Ireland situation. So they're up and running from July 31st.
Yeah, the SSC Electricity League to resume on that date, Joe. The season will be shortened to two rounds of fixtures, the first of which had begun prior to the lockdown, most sides playing four or five games. Promotion and relegation will remain intact as before, so that's automatically one up and one down, and the playoff spot to confirm the other. It's believed that all Premier Division sides, bar Shamrock Rovers, wanted a one up, one down scenario, but were outvoted by the nine First Division clubs plus Rovers. Meanwhile, tonight, Sligo Rovers say they sternly object to the format, calling it grossly unfair and unjust, and they do not see the matter as concluded. The National League Executive Committee decision has been sent to the FAI board for ratification. The FAI Cup will be retained, and interim deputy CEO Niall Quinn says it's a good carrot for the clubs at the end of the season.
Yes, and we've looked about how we can make that part of the agenda so that clubs aren't being stretched too far in terms of the length of season and their exposure, of course, to costs for prolonged periods of time. And so what we've discussed at this point is that the eight quarterfinalists would actually complete the FAI Cup after the league season has ended, and that they will be rewarded for getting to that point. That will help them financially to get the games played for the following couple of weeks, two or three weeks after the season ends. So that's what we're looking at, and we'll see how that goes. The fixture list can contain that. And we hope that financially the clubs can too. So we'll know a little bit more about that in time. But I think today's announcement helps everything else to fall into place. So as long as the FAI board ratify the selection of the NLEC today, and we can start to do an awful lot more in terms of getting fixture lists out to clubs, giving them their individual matches week in, week out till the end of the season. And it's a nice place to be right now this evening.
This is an interesting story. We'll talk to Vinnie Pert, Dundalk manager, and David Rowe, who's been on the show in the last while as well. He's the treasurer at Sligo Rovers. So basically, in short, if you haven't been following all this, I understand there's a lot going on and this has kind of been a complicated ongoing situation. The National League Executive Committee put it to a vote across the Premier Division and the First Division, and they were accepting a majority vote. I don't think there's ever a unanimous vote in the League of Ireland ever amongst clubs. So they went with a majority vote, and it was pretty split along which league you were in. So basically, all nine of the First Division clubs voted for this. The reason they voted for it is pretty clear cut. There were two spots for promotion. So that's that was the real appeal if you're in the First Division. Obviously, there's going to be fewer games. That's the nature of the world at the moment. But you still had your two spots for promotion. And then the Premier clubs, nine of the 10 of them voted against it. You would think in part because they don't want the two relegation spots. They'd much prefer that to be one, except for Shamrock Rovers, who are top of the league, and they effectively had the decisive vote. So all nine First Division clubs were for it, all 10 Premier Division clubs were against it, and then Rovers decided to side with the First Division clubs. So quite an interesting dynamic there.
Joe, that means very few teams in the Premier Division have been swayed by the conversations that have happened in the last couple of weeks then, because I've been on pretty decent authority
my maths isn't so good, but 90% haven't.
Yeah, that all the First Division teams, as of last Friday week, were already convinced to vote in favour of the proposals and for the League of Ireland season to get back underway.
Yeah.
So there was no convincing needed there. And Shamrock Rovers, you could argue, are a First Division team as well as a Premier Division team this year because of their second team being in the First Division. So you are looking at a very divided situation where the clubs who are going back to play Premier Division football are not happy with the format that's been agreed today.
Yeah, we asked Shamrock Rovers on if they wanted to comment. We asked Stephen McPhail, he wasn't available. The Shamrock Rovers B team theory has been thrown around. The other point made is that Rovers are 3 points clear at the top of the table and they just do not want to mess with the format in any way. They don't want any semblance of, restart the whole thing over. Or, there was also some talk that Dundalk were going to come with a proposal of 27 games as opposed to the 18 they've agreed on. And obviously, if you're a few points clear, the fewer games, the better from your point of view. But we don't know their thinking exactly. They haven't been overly clear on it. But we'll talk about that at 7:30 or so. Richie, you're going to some of the reaction to Michael Deignan on OTBAN this morning.
Yeah, Colm O'Rourke essentially adding to his voice to the chorus, looking for solutions for counties that disregard those training guidelines. The GEA, as we've noted here this evening, have asked all intercounty teams to refrain from training until September 14th. And the Meath legend O'Rourke told this morning's OTBAN there needs to be punishments in place.
I'm a school principal, and I realised a long time ago, there's no point in having a sanction or having a rule if you don't have a sanction. If you do X, you get Y, and it works very simple, and everybody understands that in life. And if you're going to have a training ban, and yet counties are flouting it openly, without sanction, then the whole thing becomes a joke. And what has happened now is that we've got the worst of every world. We have the counties training in some places and the development of a club championship structure, which has been squeezed so tight to ensure that it finishes quickly, that fellas can get back to training with the county team. I thought we might have learned something, but obviously there are a lot of places where county executives don't understand that the real reason for their existence is to promote football in clubs rather than the elite of a county team.
That's Conor O'Rourke this morning. Full interview on the OTB app. Football tonight, Richie.
Yeah, Shane Duffy is back in the Brighton starting 11 for the first time since February. The Republic of Ireland defender is restored to Brighton's defence for the visit of Manchester United. Saturday's substitute appearance against Arsenal was Duffy's first since the loss of his father in May. Aaron Connolly also starting for Brighton tonight for Manchester United. The team just in for this one too. David De Gea starts in goal. A back four then of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Victor Lindelof, Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw. Bruno Fernandes, Nemanja Matic and Paul Pogba are in midfield. Field and then the front three of Mason Greenwood, Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford. Plenty of pace to trouble Duffy tonight, and kickoff is at 8:15. Leeds can establish a 6-point lead at the top of the championship tonight. Marcelo Bielsa's side play host to bottom side Luton from 7:45. At the same time, Wigan take on Stoke. There's one result in already this evening from the championship. Millwall 1, Swansea 1 is out, finished at the Den. Brentford continuing their late push for an automatic promotion spot. They're currently 1-0 up away to Reading. It's scoreless with 56 minutes played between Barnsley and Blackburn. Cardiff City and Charlton are also scoreless in the Welsh capital, and as they approach half time in the West London Derby at Loftus Road, it's currently QPR 1, Fulham 1.
Jerry Ryan on YouTube: these whining cultures will try anything to deny Dublin their greatness and a crack at six in a row, which is an excellent point. Tom says, ah Jesus lads, and I do agree with this as well, because I am in this camp ultimately, even above the club game. I'm not playing at the moment, so selfishly I'm in this camp. Ah, Jesus, lads, can we not lose sight of the fact that the inter-county championships are brilliant and we're talking about them as if they're some kind of burden on the GAA? That is true, Will. I don't want to create some kind of mass movement here where we bully the inter-county season into a month and into complete submission.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. I mean, when the inter-county season comes back around, there's a lot still to be played for in the last two rounds of the National Football League before we even get into the championship. And then when the championship comes around, we're going to be blessed with four particularly big fixtures in the first month. You're going to have Donegal against Tyrone in a knockout championship game. You're going to have Cork and Kerry meeting in the semi-finals in Munster. And all, in all likelihood, you'll have a game between Mayo and Roscommon in the football. That's before we even look at the hurling, where on the first weekend of November, you're going to be blessed to have Galway against Wexford in the semi-finals of the Leinster Hurling Championship, and potentially a meeting of Tipperary and Limerick in the semi-finals in Munster, all played that weekend with provincial quarterfinals on. Like, we have a festival coming up in December where we're going to have the All-Ireland final just a week before the football final, which is the Saturday before Christmas. That's going to be an evening game. There's going to be a freshness and a newness, I think, about this. The hurling championship going back to what it would have looked like before we went into round robin series, and the football having a real bite about it where every game is going to be knockout championship. Yeah. Like, we can complain and obviously be concerned about a lot that's going to happen between now and probably the 14th of September. And I think those concerns are valid. But once the championship comes around, I'm not going to be any hypocrite who says that I'm fighting for a club player. I want to sit down and watch these games.
Same. And you don't want the inter-county standard to drop. You know, like, I totally accept when Michael Dignan made the point last night, these lads are doing 30 hours of training and it's too much. But equally, there will always be teams where players really want to drive themselves on and give things a good crack for their 4 or 5 years of their prime, you know? Like, you suspect that Kieran McGeaney, Armagh team, were doing savage training and happy to do it, and it was the most important thing in their lives, and they wanted it to be that way.
And players enjoy the training. It is an arms race, essentially.
Yeah, it is.
They enjoy this.
And there will always be, that, you know, if you were to say to players, well, we want you to go back to two nights training a week, a huge number of players would say, well, I don't want that. I want to be as good as I can be. I want to be great, you know? So I don't know. I mean, sometimes I do think we are headed long-term to a split between county and club. That club, you know, everyone's playing the summer, everyone wants to know when the games are on. How is that really compatible with county seasons where you don't know, and in dual counties in particular, when the county will exit the championship, you know? It goes against the complete ethos of the GAA, I know, but as times have moved on and players want to give the best for their county, do we just get to a point where you give your 5, 6 years, 7 years to the county and the club continues without you, and then you go back in your 30s and you play your club football, and you have times where the club players are playing their matches and then they're going to watch the county play and everybody's happier. It's not a perfect solution. And the CPA would argue, like, there are ways, if we're smart, to allow county players to play for the club as well. But you're always just going to have this. The friction is unavoidable. The friction is just unavoidable, even in terms of the training you're doing. If you're a county manager and you've got lads at 10 different clubs doing 10 different versions of training, you know, so it's just endlessly complicated. Like, I do have big sympathy for the GAA, Will, when they're trying to sort this whole thing out. Even what's coming up, 11-week window for clubs, and then they're cramming the intercounty in as well, and the intercounty managers are saying, I don't have enough time. Club players are saying, I'm being tugged at, you know, in both directions. There's no solution to that.
What you're effectively going to end up seeing here is what's happened in the rugby, whereby club players are taken away from the clubs and they're specifically the domain of the provinces. Similarly, the same thing happened in cricket in the UK and England, and specifically whereby everybody's obviously contracted to a club and they might, you know, play a game one day here and there, but ultimately they are an England player more than they are anything else, more than they play for Warwickshire or Somerset or Lancashire or what have you. So you are going to have this thing whereby I think the GAA are wary of it, and I think they're right, is that they don't want that massive separation between county players and club players. They don't want them to be this completely two separate entities, because once you do that, then you're cutting the legs off of the clubs, I think.
And you're veering towards some kind of professionalism, potentially, who knows?
And
already I'm sure there'll be people texting in saying, well, inter-county players want to play for their club. They should be allowed to do both, you know? I don't know what you think, Will.
Separate windows might be the only way, Joe. It might be what has to happen, and that would probably involve a condensing of the inter-county season. In Gaelic games, there just seems to be, no matter what happens, even in this pandemic-based year, there's a concern to try and create as many games as is possible. So even in championships, we try to create leagues to try and draw championships out, which puts pressure on a calendar, even in this year where we've lost, you know, 14, 15 weeks because of the pandemic. This could have been a chance maybe to look at something different, but still we reach back to go for the provincials in the way that they were. So when it comes to Gaelic games thinking, it seems to me that we're never going to find that kind of sweet spot between players getting a chance to play for both their club and their county in a summer. Probably the only way, if we're going to have players available to play for their club, will be to create a defined club season and a defined county season, and to try and minimise the overlap between the two. Mm. Because this whole training argument is all about that too. This is about the overlap. It's about county managers being concerned about the quality of training they're getting, the paranoia about, you know, if you're Declan Boner or if you're Mickey Hart, you'd be concerned, or Donegal gone back a bit early, or Tyrone doing something that we're not doing. And naturally, I think you need to have defined seasons and possibly even shorten down the inter-county season if possible. That to me seems the only solution long-term. Mm.
We're not going to solve it here, that's for sure. Dinny in Cork. Joe, I'm a former GAA club player. Wanted to ask you, how long has this GAA club versus county debate been going on? Is it 20 years or more? For the best-run sporting organisation in the country, this story is the biggest broken record in Irish sport. Head-wrecking every time it's in the news. I know, I'm sorry. Like, even as I'm talking about it, I know it's head-wrecking. Yeah, I'd guess about 20, 25 years. Backdoor system, extending the inter-county system, increased standards in S&C and drive of players at club level and county level. The whole thing seems to have just got out of control, particularly in the last 20, 25 years. I don't doubt it was still an issue 30, 40 years ago, but it really seems to have heightened in the last 20. Joe, I've been meaning to ask for years.
Here you go, Joe. He's married. He's married.
Tonight,
leave alone.
Tonight is the night. On the OTB intro music, who says, how can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone? And I'll do anything I can to play for my country again. Well, do it then. Sound. It is, of course, the one,
Robert
the
Savage.
Only,
yeah.
Robbie Savage. He was talking about John Toshack, who evidently didn't have a mobile phone or didn't have a number he wanted to give to Robbie Savage. And Robbie is on Welsh radio making his case, and it's a big story in Wales. And, you know, he's, I'll do anything to play for my country. And the hosts are not having it. That's why they say, well, do it then. You know, and they defend John Toshack for not having a mobile phone, to which Robbie goes, It's good stuff. The full thing's on radio. Sorry, the full thing's on radio. The full thing's on YouTube.
The full thing's
on YouTube if you want to get there. Lads, thoughts on the new Nike ball? Apparently the Ronaldo free kicks are a thing of the past, says Derek.
I've seen it.
It would seem. Well, can we let's call them the Janino free kicks. I mean, let's give the man some credit here. Yeah, so apparently the new Nike ball, it looks like a golf ball is what they're saying.
And a lot of contours on it.
A lot of ridges. The goalkeepers here in the London Times, it says, will be rejoicing. Nike unveiled a new ball. It will be used in the Premier League. And apparently it doesn't swerve unpredictably in the air. There's been an 8-year investigation into this. 8 years they've been working on this ball.
It's like club versus county.
I mean, would you want that to be your life's work, really? So apparently, this football will have a 30% truer flight than its predecessor. So it means the knuckleball technique of Ronaldo and others may be a thing of the past. And Nike says the ridges introduced, it's called the flight ball. It's going to replace the Merlin ball, of course. Will give it the appearance of a giant golf ball and lead to a more predictable and smoother journey through the air with less wobble. And then they have some boffin from the Sports Engineering Research Sheffield University place saying, from what I can understand, the mechanics of this mean it would be much more difficult to get the ball to act with this kind of behaviour. I don't know. I was partial to a knuckleball, I have to say.
He's infinitely more qualified than you or she, and you reduce him to the status of boffin job. That
Dr.
is
Dr. Simon Choppin.
There you go. Give him his due. The man has worked hard in balls.
That was very anti-science of me, wasn't it? Very anti-expert. Very. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear
you're sick of experts, Joe.
I just feel they've had their time. They've had their time. So there you go, the Nike ball. It's no Jabulani. Is that what the one was called?
Jabulani, yeah.
Jabulani. Yeah. The Jabulani, that was South African World Cup.
Yes.
And it was Brazuca. A disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, and yeah, it was to be fair, there was an effort of playing in altitude in some of the games as well that had a bit of an impact.
Okay. Right, so where are we going?
Newcastle. Premier League CEO Richard Masters hopes the proposed takeover of Newcastle United can be completed shortly. Masters appeared before MPs at a remote digital culture, media and sport committee hearing today. A bid headed by the Saudi Public Investment Fund is currently under review. And Masters was asked by the Scottish National Party MP John Nicholson why the fit and proper persons test was taking so long in this case.
There's no timetable within which the board, and it is the board that considers takeovers, there's no timetable set. As part of the rules, there is no particular time frame these things normally take. Some takeovers are straightforward and others aren't.
I'm told that the Premier League has been put under enormous pressure by the government to look favourably on the Saudi deal. Have you spoken to anybody in government about it?
Well, again, I'm talking generally. During my time at the Premier League, I'm not aware of government placing any pressure on the Premier League, one way or another, in relation to any takeover.
Interesting. So, I mean, the MP there was John Nicholson, Richie, right? So he was saying, I've heard government are putting Premier League under big pressure to accept the Saudi takeover.
Yeah, to keep the, essentially, the relationship between Saudi Arabia and the UK sweet, that they want this all to be glossed over and passed over the table pretty quickly. And Masters is insisting that no such talks have taken place, at least to his knowledge. But if that's been mooted, and I'd imagine it would be, like, it's a massive thing for Saudi Arabia to suddenly find themselves involved in the most visible sporting league in the world. For that to get over the line would be of massive importance to the people behind that bid. So if there were discussions taking place, at least at a semi-governmental level or a semi-ministerial level, and you presume that they would have already happened by now, it's how much pressure they can actually exert and how much influence they will actually hold is another question.
Yes, and what you define as pressure as well can be exerted in very subtle ways. So, this is interesting. Leroy Sané, the mystery that is, the enigma that is Leroy Sané.
It seems as if the deal is done. It's reported that a fee has been agreed between Manchester City and Bayern Munich for Sané. The German international winger will swap the Etihad for the Allianz for an initial fee of €45 million. Sané has a year left on his contract, but will be allowed to leave this summer after failing to agree a new deal. According to people who are close to the subject, he's heading to Munich as we speak to get the deal done.
Even €45 million will. For Sané in the current market. Like, there's something off here. There's something that doesn't add up. And, you know, it's alluded to his personality, and he wasn't in the World Cup squad for Germany. When he is playing well, he is just a stunningly good player. He's worth, you know, upwards of 60, 70, 80 million, given his age profile as well. And it's like, I'm wondering, are we going to be talking about one of the great wasted talents in about 5 years' time?
Yeah, it's a huge boost to Bayern Munich as well, because they already have Serge Gnabry and Kingsley Coman, but they've been rebuilding their side and trying to get the age profile down over the last few seasons. And Leroy Sané, at his best, as we saw when Man City went over 100 points in the Premier League and he was a key player, could be really effective for Bayern Munich. And he gives them options now in that final third. They've been looking for him really since he left Gelsenkirchen and left Schalke 04 to go to Man City. The deal was perhaps too expensive for them at that time, and they've been tracking him since. I'm surprised that Man City are allowing him to leave for that kind of money. When you see Artur Melo going from Barcelona to Juventus for €82 million, even Miralem Pjanic going for, I think, €60 million in the opposite direction, it just goes to show what players are being valued at the moment. And maybe this is just a COVID deal in terms of what Bayern Munich are able to get. Maybe City are accepting, because he has just 12 months left in his contract, that maybe Bayern Munich are the only club they can sell to. But on the face of it, that looks a remarkable bargain for Bayern Munich.
Yeah, it does. If he sorts his head out and gets going again. So, ladies football draw this evening, Rich?
Yeah, it's actually just underway, the draw for this. The All-Ireland champions Dublin are among the seeds for tonight's TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Football Championship draw. Cork, Galway and Mayo are the other seeded teams in the senior draw, which will see 12 counties split into four groups of three. The group winners of each will then progress to the All-Ireland semi-finals.
Okay. Last two texts before we go. Joel, you asked Richie where he got his Bose face mask. He tweeted a photo of today, says John.
Bose Webshop.
From Bose, I would have thought, yeah. Does it have Bob Marley on it, or what's the...
Official merchandise. No, it's just the crest, Dublin's originals on there. There we go. That's me. Is that me? That's me. Yeah.
Very good, very good. Just a little hairy chest creeping up there in the photos. Very nice.
I got to keep the public entertained, Joe. You know what I mean?
And somebody says, am I seeing a peek of Richie's dog on the bed behind him?
Yeah, Lucy's here. Lucy, come here. Hold on. Lucy, Ricky.
People on the radio can't see Lucy.
People on the radio can't see Lucy, but...
There's Lucy, my God.
There. YouTube's getting the benefit here.
YouTube's getting the benefit of Lucy here.
Excuse my ignorance. Does Lucy need a haircut? Is that how it works with dogs?
No, that's just the
general just her vibe.
Length of her hair, yeah.
She's very nice. I didn't know you had a dog. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. You don't pay attention to my life, Joe. That's fine.
Well, on that note, the news round has come to a close. Richie McCormack, thank you.
God bless.
Will O'Callaghan, thanks very much, Will.
Cheers, lads.
Short ad break. After 8 o'clock, we're talking NASCAR with Jay Busby, sports writer, covers the sport. It has been very much in the news post the death of George Floyd. But up next, League of Ireland back underway. Not everybody, would seem the majority in the case of the Premier Division, happy with the situation. We'll be talking about that next.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.